NPR News analyst Cokie Roberts is a natural choice to write about the founding of America. One of her ancestors, William Claiborne, went to Congress in 1790, but there's no record of his wife. Cokie's curiosity about Mrs. Claiborne is one of the reasons she set about writing her latest book, Founding Mothers, The Women Who Raised Our Nation. NPR's Renee Montaigne spoke with her.
The women profiled in Founding Mothers are mostly elite, by definition, since they had influence on the politically powerful Founding Fathers. Their writings have survived through the years because these women were mostly educated. Beyond that, what they had in common, Cokie writes, is that these women were tough and they rose to the occasion.
You know, we forget the Revolutionary War went on for 8 long years. And these women were either on the home front, defending their turf and trying to keep the farming business or even a legal business going, or they went to camp. I think you can say that Martha Washington was responsible for keeping troops from deserting. They were demoralized, and she would go in, and she would pray with them. She would nurse the sick, and the troops loved her. And after she became First Lady, they would come around, veterans all the time, to visit her, and she would reminisce with them and give them some handouts, but also should lobby Congress to give them decent veterans benefits.
In the run-up to the war, and this would be 1767, 1768, the fight was on over unjust taxes that Britain had levied on the colonies. And one weapon that was fully at the disposal of women was the boycott.
And they used it. The newspapers of the time called on all citizens, male and female, explicitly to avoid shopping at certain places because the shopkeeper was importing British goods. And they organized. They had spinning bees where they made their own cloth so that the British cloth did not have to be imported. One of the best symbols of it was funeral processions. Mourning wear came in from Britain. So people suddenly started wearing colors to funerals so that they would show the British that they meant it. They were not going to buy anything British made. It was very hard on the women, and they did it. And they persecuted any shopkeeper who they thought was either importing from Britain or hiking up the price of local goods. And Abigail Adams wrote a very funny letter to John. "A number of females, some say 100, some say more, assembled with a cart and trucks, marched down to the warehouse and demanded the keys, which he refused to deliver, upon which one of them seized him by his neck and tossed him into the cart. He delivered the keys when they tipped up the cart and discharged him, then opened the warehouse, hoisted out the coffee themselves, put it into the trucks, and drove off. It was reported he had a spanking among them, but I believe this was not true. A large concourse of men stood amazed, silent spectators of the whole transaction."
There was a transplanted American, Esther Reed. She actually wrote letters, as did many of these women, that revealed a real savvy, subtle take on politics. And the one that was amusing to me was she wrote asking about Benjamin Franklin on different occasions, and he was in London, and she had friends in London. And basically she portrays him as a politician who's got his finger in the wind.
She does indeed. When she came to America, she wrote to her brother asking, "Which way does Dr. Franklin go? Is he waiting for the wind to blow?" She did have a great sense of humor about it. So did a lot of these women.
Yes, they here and there amused themselves with gossip. One of the funny stories was Martha Washington adopting a tomcat in sort of the dead of winter when she's with George and the troops, and she called him Hamilton.
Right, because Hamilton and tomcats resembled each other.
The young and handsome then, Alexander Hamilton, kind of had a reputation. There's one woman's name that appears on the Declaration of Independence.
That's right, Mary Catherine Goddard. She was a newspaper woman, and she was a printer. And by the time the signers of the Declaration of Independence were ready to actually print up the Declaration with their names attached, by that time they had been run out of Philadelphia by the British. They were in Baltimore, and they went to a woman, Mary Catherine Goddard, to have the Declaration printed. And she very bravely printed her own name at the bottom. So she is a signer as well.
Reading this and some of the political views of the women, you wonder only one thing, and that is you wonder if it might have been better had they had more influence. And I'm thinking in particular of Abigail Adams, and she's writing her husband. Part of the news was that a group of African Americans, she called them Negroes, were possibly planning a mutiny. And then she went on to say,
That she sympathized with them, because how could America be talking about freedom when you were depriving slaves of freedom? And she was a great opponent of slavery from the beginning.
And she ends it with, "You know my mind upon this subject."
You know my mind upon this subject. I think that he probably knew her mind on all subjects. Abigail Adams was not at all shy about letting him know what she thought. And every so often, John Adams would do such a stupid thing. You know, he's off in France. She's trying to keep body and soul together. And he tells her that he admires the French ladies. I mean, please. But she quickly got off her retort, which was, well, American ladies would be admirable if they were allowed to have a good education, too.
Abigail Adams is just one of the women in the new book by Morning Edition political analyst Cokey Roberts. It's called Founding Mothers, The Women Who Raised Our Nation. I'm Renee Montaigne, NPR News.